Okay, let's get started. How's everybody doing? Doing good? It's kind of supposed to rain today, you know? It turned out to be a beautiful day, so. There's all these people are coming right. Today we're going to have some time at the beginning to have a nice discussion on some of the items that you chose on Tuesday. Works better when you turn it on. Jason, tell us what you're doing with your project. Tell us about your project, what it is, what you've been up to.
So April and I are doing a wheelchair backup alert for people who, you know, can't turn their head or torso enough to see behind them when they're up in a power wheelchair. And so this is our sponsor is a woman who works at the VA. So on Monday we actually went and talked to her and talked to one of the technicians who works at the rehab center and looked at some of the power wheelchairs, and we actually got to like ride around one. So
yeah.
You know, we're looking to see what they had in mind, kind of bouncing some of our initial ideas off of them and see what they thought about them, and looking at fairly seeing an initial idea as to how like we'd be able to mount things to the different chairs, things like that, or how we could connect them to power on the chairs.
So you've been brainstorming a little bit as well?
Yeah.
You got it narrowed down to a few good ideas yet, or?
We still want to talk to you today after class.
Okay.
Sign up for it.
Okay.
And get some more feedback from you too.
Okay, great. Anybody else would like to report on what they've been up to? Okay, we'll move on. So we know about sign-up sheets. I want to give you a list of the upcoming lectures. 2 weeks from today, this is important, the midterm presentations in this room. We're going to have to figure out how much time each team gets because we have a lot of teams this year and still a limited amount of time. So which students would be open to extending the class for a few minutes to give each team a little bit more time to present, or which people would have to leave early? Okay, do it that way. You have to leave early. Okay. Well, we can. We'll revisit that again next time. Well, I don't think we'll be going beyond 6 o'clock. Would that still be an issue with you? Yeah. Okay. So on Tuesday, robotic stuff. On Thursday, prosthetics. A week from Tuesday, we're going to have an assistive technology fair. It looks like we'll have about 10 vendors outside in the area outside over there, and maybe some in here. So you'll be going around and talking to them and figuring out what they're selling and how well it works and asking lots of questions. So that'll be a lot of fun. Our first tour of the VA is coming up on the 18th. I'll be arranging some transportation. I just want to know, how many students have their own cars on campus that they could use to chauffeur people?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Okay, that'll be good. I'm going to have sign-up sheets for drivers and sign-up sheets for students. So that seems to have worked in the past, and nobody got lost, so we'll do that again this year. Okay, and some very interesting talks on autism, and a couple of my colleagues talking about wheelchairs, starting an assistive technology company, talking about aesthetics. So there's going to be a lot of good lectures in the second half of the quarter. So I want to get teams to sign up to meet with me for about 15 minutes to make sure that you guys are on track. Also, people who are working on individual projects, I'd like to meet with them as well. And this is in addition to sending me a little bit of an update on what you're doing. It's important for me to know that you've been working on stuff. I want to mention a couple things here about working with other people. It's really important that you get a lot of different perspectives on what you're doing. And there's a lot of resources around that you can get that information, not only from people in the community, but the person who suggested the project, from your colleagues. You know, it'd be good for you to brainstorm with them or tell them about what you're working on, and maybe they have some ideas that can help you. Certainly the resource people in the course or in PRL, those guys can all help you. I mean, they're there for you, so you should make good use of them. So an important issue here is that when you're working on a project, you can't be stuck by waiting for somebody to respond. If you're waiting on one person to send you a sample or to return an email or, you know, get a part or something, that's really a killer thing. You've got to have alternates. If you don't hear back from somebody, you have to go to somebody else. If you can't get a part at one place, you know, find a part someplace else. You've got to have workarounds for all these things because you don't want to get stuck because your time is ticking away. So, you know, you can't say, well, I haven't heard back from, you know, my supplier yet. You've got to move on with something else that will keep you going. So that's really important. Don't get stuck. This weekend when you have a break, I'd like for you to watch this robot video, TED video. I'll send you a link to that tomorrow. And it's really sort of interesting. And maybe we'll have a little bit of a preview of that today. So on Tuesday I asked you to select what kind of discussion we're going to have today. So what item of the five do you think won out?
Video.
Okay. Well, not by much. So all the options got a hit. So rather than disappoint somebody, I'm going to do a little bit from each of these, if that's okay. Okay. So failure. Failure is a pretty important concept. Everybody knows about failure. We've heard about it in Apollo 13. They made a movie about it, but before the movie, it was real life. You know, and failure was not an option because lives and national prestige were on the line. So that's why it was important. Everybody was watching to make sure that, you know, these astronauts didn't die in space. But in reality, failure is always an option. You can always fail. And that's what Adam Savage says. So, you know, sometimes it just doesn't work out. And an extreme example of that is Thomas Edison. He was trying to make a filament that would work in the light bulb. And so his technique was, I'll try everything. And he tried 10,000 things that didn't work. So he spent a lot of time on failures. But, you know, I'm saying that maybe he should have researched the problem a little bit more and get a little bit better idea of, you know, what kind of material he needed to make that happen. Maybe the technology wasn't there and he just had to try everything. But, you know, trying everything is not going to be an option for you guys because you don't have the time. And this is Seth Shostak from the SETI Institute, who has a remarkable resemblance to Edison, I thought. So that's why I put that in there. If you ever get a chance to listen to his talk on PBS, it's really, really great. And then, you know, even cartoon characters have things to say about failure. Trying is the first step toward failure. But if you don't try, you'll never succeed. You've got to take chances. You've got to maybe work out a little bit out of your comfort zone. You've got to try things that maybe nobody's ever tried before. Sure, you may fail, but you may learn a lot. And you know, failure, you know, is just a temporary barrier. Your success may be on the other side of your next failure. So failure should be an important goal for you to get beyond. So how do you take care of failure? Well, you got to prototype early. You got to make a lot of models and figure out what's working and what isn't working. You got to use all your skills and knowledge and senses. You got to feel things. You got to rotate your objects around, look at it, make good use of all the people who are around to help you. A very important thing is, you know, you can spend all your time planning a project, Or you can spend all your time building stuff that doesn't work. In reality, you have to have a good balance between the two. So you just can't go wildly, you know, building things without analyzing what you've done. And you can't just plan and plan and plan and wait until the last moment to build something. So it all comes down to using your time wisely. And your path, your project path, may be littered with failures and successes, but sometimes that's the only way to get to the end, is to get through these failures. So be prepared to make mistakes and experience these failures. You have to plan for them, understand them, learn from them, and keep on going. So don't give up. Don't be discouraged. You know, everybody has failed. You know, I mean, how many people have written a program that worked the very first time? It never happens. Everything is going to have some setbacks to it. So that's that message. So it's going to do famous people with disabilities. But I decided to do something a little bit different. Famous TV characters with disabilities. And I chose people from the Big Bang Theory. So let's go through these, you know, one at a time and figure out what their disability is. Okay, we got Raj. Who knows what Raj's disability is? Yes? Yeah, but he had a term for that. I mean, that's right. What term did he use? Do you know? Okay. Selective mutism. How many think this is a made-up term? How many people think it's a real term? It's actually a real term. So kids with autism, even though they're able to speak, sometimes choose not to speak just because they don't like that kind of involvement. So selective mutism is actually a real term. Okay, Sheldon got a lot of problems, but he had a lot of, he's a real character, but what are the two things that sort of separate him? He talks about a lot. What? OCD, yeah. Could be, you know, it's never brought up, I haven't thought of that. He certainly seems to be focused a lot, and I agree with the OCD part. But there's one other thing that he boasts of all the time. I'm not sure this is disability. It's called eidetic memory. And it's sort of like a photographic memory, but photographic memory isn't really photographic. It's more related to remembering when things happen. And he always talks about, I remember, this conversation and stuff like that. And there are people that actually have that kind of memory. And there's just an article in MIT Technology Review, and 60 Minutes did a couple articles on people with this kind of memory, where you tell them a date and they'll tell you, what day of the week it was and what they were wearing and what they ate and what the weather was and what the news was. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Okay, let's go down to Leonard. Leonard has two things.
Lactose intolerance.
Yeah, lactose intolerance. And what's the other one? What does he use a lot? He uses an inhaler a lot, right? So, especially when he gets anxious and nervous. So, I mean, actually, all humans started out as being lactose intolerant, and just through a mutation that we're able to drink cow's milk. So that's a mutation. Okay? Interesting feature. Howard. Peanut allergy. Severe. Remember that one episode where his face blew up? I just read something about this today, that they're actually working on a technique to help people with severe peanut allergies. And so what they do is they give them a very small amount of peanut, maybe like a couple milligrams, and they build up the tolerance. And so at the end of a couple months, they're able to eat like 5 peanuts without, blowing up. So it doesn't solve the problem completely, but it avoids the accidental ingestion of peanuts that cause a huge effect. So these are real-life things. So who did I forget? Penny. What's Penny's deal? Disability. And it's actually the most severe one of everybody, in a way. But it's never said on television. Ready? She has no last name. And if you don't have a last name, you don't have an identity, and you can't, live in society, right? So, I mean, unless you're Cher or Madonna or stuff. people like that, but she has no last name. Enough of that foolishness. Fun with ethics. Well, ethics aren't fun because, you know, as an engineer, I want to be able to plug things into an equation and come up with an answer. I want to be able to scientifically say, you know, this is correct and what you said is wrong. Well, ethics, there is no right answer because the decision that you make is a complex combination of, you know, your upbringing, you know, where you live, your economics, how you were brought up, law, your individual notion of what is right, and your experience. And maybe, you know, your parents told you what's right or wrong, and your teachers tell you, you know, what's right or wrong. And maybe you went to a religious school or something, and they, you know, gave you some some information about some of these things. So let's go through two scenarios. Would it be wrong for a normal couple to abort a fetus diagnosed with dwarfism? So while you're thinking about that, here's another one that I came across. If two parents with an inherited form of dwarfism wanted a child that looked like them, would it be wrong for them to terminate a normal-sized fetus? I mean, this is a really tough problem. Does anybody have anything to say about this? I know that some people might be, against abortion in, you know, most any form, but these are really, like, special cases. Talk about all the time you hear about people, if they can test to see now if a child is going to have Down syndrome, they can check for missing chromosomes and stuff like that. And that was the whole point of this article here. Sometimes these tests give you too much information. Maybe you shouldn't have all that information. Maybe you shouldn't know, you know, if you have a particular illness, if there's no treatment for it. Some people say that, you know, that's what you should do. But these are the kinds of conundrum that you get into. And this happens not only with disability, but, you know, other things as well. Okay. Here's another one. I mean, these are like, you know, real life things. Should everybody have the right to bear arms? Well, it's in the Bill of Rights, right? So everybody, you know, does have that.
Sort of.
Excuse me?
Sort of.
Sort of, right. I mean, if you're a convicted, you know, criminal, you know, you lose that right. But, you know, in most places, you know, you have the right to bear arms. So does this also work for somebody who is blind or mentally impaired? These are big questions. And I actually heard that in some states there's actually legislation that will deny a person the right to bear arms if they're blind. So that was not much fun, was it? Okay, vintage assistive technology. I got a few slides here. An old wheelchair using a wicker wooden back and wooden wheels with wooden spokes, probably from the early 1900s. Here's another a little bit better design with metal spokes, still the same kind of design with the third wheel in the back, and this looks like President Hoover, I think, on the White House grounds, some disabled veterans back then. Another wooden wheelchair looks like a deck chair or something, but it has a reclining mechanism, still has the third wheel in the back, it has rims, you know, that you can push, and it looks like the leg rests are adjustable as well, so maybe not a bad design. I would actually saw this in a museum. I would guess this is something like was made by a farmer or something, because this looks like a regular chair that's been adapted to be a wheelchair with these metal wheels. I don't even know how you would roll it yourself, and a third wheel on the back, but really interesting. This is a design that I actually knew about. It's a company in Sunnyvale that did this a number of years ago. This is a stair climbing wheelchair, and it uses tracks on both sides to have it grip the stairs. So you go up the stairs, up and down the stairs, you know, sort of backwards from bottom to top. And the neat thing is that the chair on top here sort of leans back so that you're always over the center of gravity and not, you know, pitched forward and stuff. So that was really neat. A really great engineering design. It seemed to work. It was sponsored by Foster's Beer. You know, they probably put $50 million into this. And did you ever see one? Nope.
Yeah.
You saw one? Okay. Yeah. So I think this was at an Abilities Expo. I think I was actually there. So it's pretty interesting. So even the best engineering designs, like I say, don't make it to market. So it's going to be expensive. It's all made out of aircraft parts and stuff like that. Really, really nice design. Oh, this is a prototype that we did over at the VA. And it used these three wheels that are sort of pointed in all different directions. And here's the third wheel sort of in front of you. And these wheels are special because they have rollers on the outer edge. And so each wheel has a motor attached to it. And depending how you spin the motors, this chair will go forward. You know, if this wheel was turning clockwise and this other one was turning, be counterclockwise if you looked at it from the other side, and the front wheel was just on the rollers, it would go forward. And if they were all going the same direction, you'd be spinning around. And if this one went this way, and that one went that way, and this one spun sort of this way, you can go sideways. And I remember we had this at a conference up in Montreal, and I spent a few minutes going down the halls of the exhibit hall sideways in a wheelchair, which was pretty awesome. People, it got a lot of looks. And so we actually did another design of it, changed the wheel configuration around, made it a little bit different wheels, called Alexis wheelchair, and almost made it to market. Almost made it to market. Now, if you go over to the Gates building, you'll see a robot that uses these wheels to provide the omnidirectional ability for a robot. So we provided some researchers at Stanford with those wheels way back when. It was probably in like 85. So we had an exoskeleton lab here last Thursday. Another kind of walking is the electrically stimulated walking, where you have either surface electrodes on a skin or embedded electrodes that stimulate the muscles electrically. And if you have enough electrodes and you know how to sequence the stimulation, you can get people to walk. And I've seen this done. But it took a lot of equipment and a lot of time. The VA did a lot of work. This is Dr. Marcellet. And he had about four or five guys, you know, hooked up to this. And one of them was really good at walking. He could walk across here in a very fast gait. And there are separate programs for standing up and sitting down and going upstairs and downstairs. But this FES walking has fallen out of favor. These electrodes, when they implant the electrodes, with some of these guys, they couldn't get the electrodes out. And so one of the guys is suing the VA because, you know, the electrodes are causing damage to him now after all these years. So FES is used for exercise, and there's a bike that you can get for therapy purposes that will allow a person who doesn't have use of their legs to operate a bicycle, a stationary bicycle. So FES is still used quite a bit. This is a very early arm exoskeleton. It's mounted to a wheelchair. You can see all the motors and cables used here. And it's controlled by this chin control switch here. It's obviously pretty crude and mechanical, but, you know, you got to start someplace. You know. Robot feeding aid. Again, there's a spoon here which scoops up food off the plate. There's a little barrier here, and I think the dish actually rotates to push all the food into one area so the spoon can get at it. And here's another design. You know, these kinds of systems are still around, and some people are successful in using them. So, Environmental control
systems. Now, these are systems that if you're in a bed and you want to control the stuff around you, like your TV, the lights, your hospital bed, the nurse call,
radio and things like that, this is what you used back then.
This is, again, this is like late 70s.
So this is a display here, and you would sequence through the functions
by blowing into a straw. And once you select the function, you can activate it by sipping. So there is a pressure vacuum switch that you would activate by blowing or sucking into a straw,
and that would activate electronics in here.
So they
used a lot of relays.
And has anybody heard of a stepping relay? Yeah, thank you. So find out about that. It's a relay that every time you actuate it, it would activate a different set of switches. So rather than just being on and off, it would go through a bunch of different different modes.
You don't see them around anymore. So
let's go back.
So this was really tough to set up because you had to run wires all over the place.
There are special TVs that were set up that when you close the switch, it would turn on, and another switch would change channels and stuff.
But now you could do that much easier with infrared control. But in order to operate the bed, you'd have to run wires from the central unit to the bed. Anything you wanted to control on and off, this would provide the power, but you'd have to have these long power lines in order to turn things on and off. So there were
a bunch of these. There's a bunch of these made now, and there's even ones that are voice controlled now.
At the VA. The VA has a couple of these.
This was a really neat system, and I met the guy who did this. This is called Butler in a Box. This is a voice controlled environmental control system built probably in the early 80s. So this is before even PCs came out.
So this was this guy was really good. He figured out how to have it recognize commands and turn things on and off. So it was really neat back then. But I'm not sure he sold very many of them. I'm sure it was expensive. Eye gaze control. So you know, now you can do this with a teeny camera, and this is the way it was done a long time ago. So it'd pick up your eye position. Here's another device that did the same thing, that you would stare at a letter and it would pick up where you were looking. Now there are devices that have infrared and camera and do a much better job of eye gaze control. If you're nonverbal and you can't use your hands, this is the way to go. But if you can use your hands and you're nonverbal, you'd use a device like this, where you would move this pointer over a menu. And I think there's a magnet in here and a bunch of read switches underneath.
And you can spell out your message letter by letter.
And it could be displayed over here or printed out,
so you can communicate to other people. You know, back then they really didn't have speech synthesizers.
So there were just keyboards, like a typewriter keyboard?
Yeah, this one was set up in a little bit different style. It's set up alphabetically rather than a keyboard. But there's a whole
not back then.
No, I mean, a lot of people just weren't, you know, didn't use a typewriter or a computer. They weren't in the computers back then. So a lot of companies actually had two models, one set up like a typewriter and one alphabetic,
and especially for kids
as well. So,
but a lot of times you see on-screen keyboards where the keyboard is on the screen and you either operate a switch or do it by looking at a character. And I just saw a great program last night on Stephen Hawking, and they showed his system that he uses a little bit. And now they apparently have a system that can recognize where he's looking on the screen and will allow him to type things out either letter by letter until you get to the point, maybe three letters, where it gives you a choice of words. So you don't have to type out all the letters of the word. It'll give you choices of words, and that's how you can get better communication rate by choosing words rather than to have type out the whole word
letter by letter. So this was a mainline product called Speak and Spell. It would actually say to you, you know, spell, you know, house, and then you'd have to go in and, you know,
hit the right keys. And again, you know, this is laid out, looks like it's laid out alphabetically. So there's two versions, one with the membrane keyboard and one with the actual switches. And you can also type in, words and have it talk to you. So a lot of people who weren't able to speak use this as the communication aid. And this is sort of neat because, you know, these were commercially available, and because they were commercially available and as an educational product, they were relatively cheap. I forgot how much they were, but it was a lot cheaper than buying something custom. And then there's people that build devices that look like old devices, and this is a steampunk wheelchair with all sorts of, they actually have smoke coming out the back and all sorts of lights and switches and stuff like that, and things bubbling in the back, and it's pretty neat. So it's a work of art, not really very, I mean, it functions as a wheelchair, but, you know, it's going to be a one-off type of design. And here's another one-off design. This is done by Orange County Chopper. They did this on TV. They built a motorcycle for a wheelchair user. He would come in the back here, lock himself in, and be able to operate all the controls on the bike. And I've seen, there's a bunch of people that have built things like this. So pretty neat. Okay, let's get to a couple videos. I have to apologize up front because the computer doesn't do videos very well because it's trying to drive the video for this screen and the video for this screen at the same time. And I'm on wireless here, but I think it'll work out. So I apologize for if it breaks up a little bit. So I'm going to do a couple commercials first. Sorry, I hit the wrong thing.
What's better, faster or slow?
Faster!
What's fast?
My mom's car and a cheetah.
Okay.
A spaceship.
And what's slow?
My grandma's slow.
Would you like it better if she was fast?
I bet she would like it if she was fast.
Maybe give her some turbo boosters.
Tape a cheetah to her back?
Tape a cheetah to her back. Seems like you've thought about this before.
It's not complicated. Faster is better. iPhone 5 downloads fastest on AT&T.
So what's really amazing about this, and I don't, you know, it took me a while to understand this, but they're actually going through the kids are going through the design development process. So the kid knew that his grandmother was slow. I mean, so it was observational, and he thought that she would like to go faster. So that's maybe empathy and stuff. And so somebody said, you know, a cheetah was fast, and he built on that, maybe, you know, strap a cheetah to her back and stuff so she would go faster. So, I mean, this was pretty amazing that they're going through parts of the design development process. You know, the kid is doing that. So that was pretty interesting for me. Okay. This one. What happened? Okay, let's try full screen. So this is a beer commercial. I want you to tell me, you know, what's going on here. You have to watch to the very end. Not promoting beer use at all. This is for educational purposes. So what's going on in this commercial? Tell me what's happening. What sport are they playing, first of all? Wheelchair basketball. And everybody's in wheelchairs, and it's very contact, you know, a lot of activity going there, a lot of athleticism being shown and stuff like that. But what happened at the end? I mean, was that sort of weird? What happened at the end?
All of you guys, just one, got up out of the wheelchair.
Why was that?
Because I'm assuming that they're all friends, and
yeah.
Because one of their friends became disabled, they decided to also, I'm sure they used to play basketball together when he was able to walk and run, so they decided to learn his sport and be able to play with him. And
that's pretty awesome, isn't it?
Yeah.
Got that. Terry?
I just want to mention as a point of interest, I saw this video on Facebook about 6 months ago, and I was really surprised because the first person who posted it was deeply, somebody that I don't know well, deeply offended by it.
Oh.
And her take, well, it's interesting because it's how you impose your own issues and experience on something. Her take was that, you know, the words that the guy, the voiceover uses, she took it as the friends were being patronizing and felt sorry for their friend, and so that's why they did it. And that was not my take on it at all. I thought it was cool. I thought it was very adaptive with everybody. And I like, you know, not that I'm promoting here, but I'd like to say all went to the bar and had a drink after, because
yeah.
That's eminently what guys do.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I just thought I'd mention that it was controversial.
Right. Well, I wasn't aware of that controversy.
Yeah.
But it was certainly a unique commercial that I wouldn't have expected.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah. Anybody else have any comments on this? Okay, maybe we'll do one more, and I'll let you pick. Somebody make a choice. A bold choice. Okay. You know, all these, you know, you can view on your own afterwards. I mean, this isn't just a one-shot deal here, so.
Fighting
Walrus. I know that Team Walrus is interested in this. Oh, this is a good one, because this is about Henry Evans. Not going. Oh, there we go. Oh, I got it. Is it happening? Oh, okay. Let's go back here. Look at it. Start over. Go. Hit this.
Do you have a different browser?
No. No, this will work. It worked before. There we go. Sorry. catch up.
Press the play.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Can I move this along? Okay, I'm going to start again. Sorry. I think that was the Wi-Fi. Okay, it's not going to work for... It's what? Yeah.
If we got his view,
yeah.
That would make
me motion. Yeah. So let me talk to you a little bit. Henry Evans is a fellow that lives in Los Altos Hills, and you'll actually meet him because he's going to be here by telepresence at the Assistive Technology Fair. And he's a fellow with quadriplegia, and he also can't talk. But he's an engineer, or was an engineer. And so he worked with some students, and they built him an interface using this Oculus Rift head-mounted display, and that allows him to control the quad rotor, and there's a camera on it, and what he sees is what the camera sees in the quad rotor. So he can go out exploring his backyard and stuff like that. And you'll see a little bit more of that in the TED video that you're going to watch this weekend. And you'll be able to talk to him because he'll be on a Beam telepresence robot in a couple weeks. So really interesting guy. He worked for a while with the folks at Will Garage, the robotics company in Menlo Park that we used to go to before they closed down. But now he worked with them, and they developed an interface for him to use that just allowed him to control that PR2 robot by moving his head and looking on the screen. So they took this very complex robot and made an interface simple enough and easy enough for him to use.
So that's pretty remarkable.
So I'll send you all these links, and you can look at them later on. But there's like hundreds and hundreds of videos, and you know I see stuff every day, and I'll pass some of those along to you because they're all really interesting about new research and stuff like that. And human interest stories. So what we'll do now is take our break, and when we come back, Terry Adams will give us a talk about the tale of two wheelchairs. I think it's a mystery, isn't it? A mystery story.
Well, it's a mystery to me.
Is it a murder mystery?
Not yet.
Okay, 5 minutes. Please sign in if you haven't done so already. I might have, but I don't recall. I'll look that up. Oh. Yeah, send me a link, and then I'll pass it along to everybody. Yeah. Thanks.
Hi.
Keegan.
Okay. You sent me a couple of emails.
Yeah.
I just wanted to apologize. I haven't sent you the summary of the first lecture yet.
Yep.
But I'm going to send that today.
Okay.
Still, I'm going to do one credit. I'm still debating whether or not I'll be able to do it pass or fail.
Okay. Well, you can figure that out.
Thank you for your patience.
Okay. I'm glad you responded. Didn't you, drop for a day and then come back?
I my schedule for the quarter.
If you want to do a day after next Tuesday, you know, just write it down. Okay. I'll transfer the microphone to you. Try to pin it on you.
I'll take it. I'll figure it out.
You got your slides here. Your slides. So.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
It's like old.
It is. Oh, I got it. Thank you. Can you open that for me? Associate Director of the Office of Accessible Education here on campus, and we provide services for students with disabilities, both academic and housing, at the grad and undergraduate level. I'm in my 19th year. I'll finish my 19th year in May. And no, I can't believe that either. So I was born with a disability. I'm 56 years old. I was born with this disability. I recently found out that they changed the name of it. Diagnostically, it has to have been within the last 5 years. But for a long time, I was saying I had epidermolytic hyperkeratosis. And now they've shortened it. And I haven't memorized the new name. But in essence, the gene that codes for forming normal skin cells is mutated in me. It was a spontaneous mutation. I didn't inherit it. And so my skin grows much too fast. I grow skin in a day that most people do in a week. And it also doesn't break down properly. So I get flakes, I get blisters, and that's primarily why I use a wheelchair.
because from walking, the friction of walking, I got blisters on my feet. But because there are so few people that have this disorder, 1 in 200,000 births, and of those, I have a particularly severe form. And in the 50s and 60s, you know, doctors don't know. They don't think of function. They think of how do we make it look more normal. And the answer is you can't. So I didn't get any mobility assistance until I was in my early 30s. And I didn't get my first power chair until 1996. And yes, I'm bitter about that. And one of the caveats I wanted to tell you guys, sometimes I've had comments on my talks that I'm really negative, and that's not my intention, but my intention is to be realistic about what a real-life person deals with who has a severe disability, even if they more or less have their shit together. You still have tremendous obstacles to deal with attitudinally and bureaucratically. And so that's what the Tale of Two Wheelchairs is about. And I just like that name. It's actually three wheelchairs. This is my newest wheelchair. I got it about 9 months ago. It's great. I love it. And I think we'll go backwards in time and start with that. So this is the first big purchase that happened from a new vendor, ATG Rehab, which is a chain. And this is the first time I go through my insurance. So this is the bill that they sent to my insurance, Blue Shield in this case. And I had a lot of trepidation about it because insurance companies try to go by Medicare rules. And Medicare rules are very restrictive about mobility aids. And if you have a severe disability, Medicare really only wants to get you a mobility aid that will get you around your house. And that's not adequate for me. I need to be able to go around campus to meetings and just basically live a pretty active life. So I was really worried that I didn't know these guys and I didn't know what their attitude was going to be. And the other thing is that is hugely important to insurance companies is I can't get this wheelchair in my house. So I park in the driveway and now I park in my van. I leave it in the van and I get out of the van and I go up 6 steps and then I use a manual wheelchair in the house.
And I was afraid that the guy that did my evaluation
was going to tell the insurance company that I could walk up 6 steps and that could have caused, if it hadn't killed the wheelchair order,
it could have caused me to have to
do a lot of appeals and arguments of why this is what I needed. But this guy was really cool. He came out to my house
and we talked about exactly what I do and how I do it.
And it turned out that his wife basically has mobility impairment, not the same disability, but the same level of mobility impairment as I do, and so he just didn't even mention that part.
So this wheelchair, I'll talk about my first wheelchair, this is the best he thought he could get me that would be covered. So I didn't have to pay anything on this wheelchair. But what I want you to notice, because
this is part of the problem with healthcare, in my humble opinion,
when it comes to durable medical equipment,
which is a category of cost that covers wheelchairs, walkers, crutches, any kind of breathing equipment. So it's equipment that you use for, you know, an estimated lifespan. So in the case of wheelchairs, it's usually 5 years. And I'm sure that each piece of equipment has an estimated
lifespan
by the insurance company. So in other words, if I got a new wheelchair last June, I can't go and ask for another one this June unless I can prove that this one is just dead for some reason.
So anyway, look at the end column where it says pretend retail price and the charge. So the base charge for this wheelchair is $9,200. And then by the time you add on all the little things, you're at $13,000. But Blue Shield only paid $7,900 because ATG
Rehab has a contract with Blue Shield.
So, even to make it even more nuanced, you can look at websites like
SpinLife.com
or PlanetMobility.com. They used to sell quickies. I don't know if they still do. But you would see a base price on those retail websites that are more like the $5,900.
So, if I wanted to buy the wheelchair myself and get reimbursed,
I could have bought it for a lower price, but my insurance company
won't pay for it. It won't reimburse me.
It has to go through this process, so the
overcharge is built in.
So, the second line item, the 4-point securement package, the company got almost $400 for that.
All it is things that are bolted to the chair so that you can be tied down if you go on the bus. I didn't ask for that. I didn't need that. But
I got it. And the other one was, this one is only, this is chump change, $28 for it. But it says I got heel loops on my adjustable foot plate.
There are no heel loops on this foot plate. There never were any heel loops on this foot plate. And I specifically told them I didn't need it.
So, also, just out of interest, if you look at line 7, I didn't highlight it, but I think this is interesting. They charged $600 for 2 batteries, but they got paid $2,700.
I had to buy batteries out of pocket for my backup chair, and they charged me $900 for 2 batteries. Same exact kind of batteries, but because it was out of pocket and they installed them for me, in less than half an hour, it was $900. So,
welcome to durable medical equipment. So I don't have a nice slide for my middle chair.
The middle chair was a nightmare from pretty much from beginning to end. So my first chair that I got in 96 was 6 or 7 years old. And one of the things that I had decided from the beginning of getting wheelchairs is that I wanted to keep to a schedule, because I had had friends who used their chairs for 10 or 15 years. And then by the time they realized they really needed to replace that chair, it was a nightmare for them dealing with Medicare, Medicaid, insurance to get a new chair. Because it was like, well, you haven't needed a new one for all this time. Why do you need a new one now? And so there were appeals and endless evaluations, and I wanted to try and avoid all that. So I went to a family-owned company. I'm not going to give the names of these companies. ATG is a chain, as I said. I'm going to talk about 2 privately owned companies. I'm not going to give their names, and although I don't know if the name is on the other slide, but there's a tort called interference with prospective business. So I could get sued if it became widely known that I was saying this is not a good company. So anyway, so I approached this company. I think before I ordered a chair from them, I went to them for batteries. And they seemed really good. They were very fast. Anyway, long story short, my insurance, I got Blue Shield last year. Before that, I had Pacific Care. And when I got my first chair, they paid the whole thing, no question. Well, by the time I was ready for my second chair, they had a $5,000 limit on durable medical equipment per year. Well, you can't get a wheelchair like this for anywhere near $5,000. So I told the guy I was working with at the company this problem. He said, well, I've got a chair that's a lot like the one you have. It's a floor model, so I can sell it to you for a discount. And it has this and that and the other thing. It's a lot like your old chair. And it looked like a lot like my old chair. Well, it turned out that it was I still had to pay $450 out of pocket for it. It was a model that was discontinued after 2 or 3 years. Not at that time, but shortly thereafter. It always had electrical problems. It was in the shop for months at a time. And so I was back to my old chair. And they never did figure out what was wrong with it. So I just bided my time. I used my old chair a lot. And now it's sitting in my driveway. And I'm even hesitant to donate it somewhere because anybody that really needs it, I would be giving them a chair that could break down on them at any time. So, I don't know. Maybe I should turn it into a planter or something. And that vendor went downhill progressively as I dealt with them to the point where the last year I had that chair, I had the chair in their shop for 6 weeks just to get new tires and batteries. And finally, I got one of the owners on the phone who admitted to me that they were $250,000 in arrears with their contracts with the people they bought tires and batteries from, and that was why they couldn't get mine. In the meantime, I'm without my chair. So one of the takeaways I realized when I was thinking about this talk is that so far, knock on PLAM, I'm having better luck with the big chains, both for this chair and for the van I have. The van I have is through a company called Mobility Works, and they are a chain, and they are in Santa Clara, and they've been great. So I always, before that, I always thought I'll go with the, you know, mom and pop vendor and support those businesses locally, and just didn't work out for me. So the old chair, the third chair, is this one. Oh, yeah, I can't really read it good. This guy turned out to be a complete crook. But it was, at one point, I think I even described him as a crook, but he's my crook, because he also didn't say anything to my insurance about the fact that I could walk a little bit at the time, and I could walk a lot more than I can now in 1996. So just as a point of comparison, he's got this discount column, and that doesn't mean anything, really. I think the way the other one is framed is a lot more realistic. It was like the unit price is retail, and the extended price is what they're going to get back from the insurance company. The only thing I can think of is why they had it formatted this way is if I had to pay for anything, look, I was getting a discount. And in that case, I did pay to have a back. This back doesn't do it, but on that chair, I had a back that I could fold. I had to be able to fold down this the back of the chair because that was the only way I could get it to fit in the van I had at that time. The other part of the story, which I'll try to be brief about, is that, so I told you about my initial disability that I was born with. When I was in my 40s, I got a bonus disability of osteoarthritis and found that I had to have both hips replaced. And so my insurance company, after I had the hip replacements, decided I didn't need a wheelchair anymore because I could stand up, because it said so in my file. And I appealed and I said, no, I don't really need the wheelchair so much for the arthritis as for the skin condition. Oh, well, we don't think so. So, and this is kind of, I still feel icky about this, but finally, a friend of mine said to me, send them glossies of your hands and feet. And I did. I sent them 8x10 pictures of my hands and feet, and within 10 days, I got approval for the wheelchair. And my doctor at the time, he's no longer my doctor, he just acted like, oh, I'm helpless, I can't do anything. Now I have a doctor who writes me a prescription for new batteries or whatever, and I just realized I never turned this on. It says mute. Oh, is it on? It was on all the time, so it was recording my pre-talk comments. Okay, good. The doctor I have now, she'll contact me in 3 weeks and say, did you get what you need? Do you want my nurse to call and yell at anybody? It's awesome. And that's the kind of doctor you need if you need services beyond the normal, or I should say the usual. So that's my tale of three wheelchairs. And any questions, any at all, what I do here, my disability, anything?
I have a question.
Yeah.
Who actually prescribed your wheelchair? Did you have input from therapists or just the vendor? I mean, who decided which?
At first, the which, first one? So the first one, I was thinking about this the other day. The first one I was with Kaiser. And I went into my dermatologist. I hadn't ever met him before. And, you know, me going into a dermatologist is scary for them because I have the most severe, most incurable thing they're probably ever going to see in their whole career. And so, and this guy was fairly young, and he just kind of said, what do you want me to do for you? What can I do for you? I said, I want a wheelchair. So he worked with his friend, who was the head of physical medicine, to write the prescription. And I said, I wanted to do this, this, and this. And bingo, I had my wheelchair. Now, that was kind of before the primary physician was so powerful. Now I just tell my primary I need to replace, I need new batteries, I need new tires, or I need a new wheelchair. And they just write a really generic kind of prescription. And depending on your insurance, it's easy or it's hard.
But the question is, it was a therapist, an occupational therapist.
So the evaluation happened at the vendor.
At the vendor. So they had a physical therapist that was a part of
it. It was a resident type person.
So somebody came in to...
No, I went there.
You went there.
And they took measurements and, you know, what can you do, what can't you do, what kind of cushion do you think you need. So it was really me and the guy who sells the wheelchairs. Not a physical therapist, not a physiatrist, but the guy that just got me this wheelchair, he was trained by Resna. He had a certificate. I shouldn't say he was trained by them, but he was certified by them.
Certified.
He took the test.
Get a certification and not have.
Yeah, you could.
Anybody else? Margaret? Yeah.
I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about how you got yourself to OID and how your experience with the medical institutions you're actually, like, if that's going to
ways that OA is run, or how your experience in your personal life and your professional life transition?
Sure, I'd love to. My life experience informs what I do hugely. I'm not in charge. I'm in charge of my caseload, and you know, I decide how I'm going to deal with my students, and that's where my life experience really comes in handy. I went to law school in my early 30s because I couldn't figure out what I was going to do when I grew up. And hated law school, but got my degree, didn't pass the bar, didn't want to take it again. And somebody that I knew from law school who ran the services at the law school was then at Stanford. And so when she found out that I was looking for a job, I had worked in law briefly right after law school, she said, "Oh, you'd be great in our office." And so I came, and that was how I fell into the job. But I will say the other thing about working in this field is that if you have a disability, and you have a disability that's really obvious and unusual like I do, it's hard for people in that field to discriminate against you. It's not so hard for other fields to still do that. There's always a way to discriminate against somebody if you want to do that. And so at that time, that was 95, here's an anecdote. So when I was still in law school, we had a career day and, you know, all these, actually it was weeks where law firms would come to campus and interview. And there was this really thick book of profiles of all these law firms. And one of the statistics they would have is number of women partners, number of ethnic minorities, and out of this book of like 300 law firms, this is 92, one had one associate that was classified as disabled. So that was fairly discouraging. So another thing about this job for me is that it's very immediate. I can do things that assist students right away. Whereas with law, if you're doing a lawsuit or a class action, it literally takes years before there's any kind of payoff. So I don't know if that answers your question. Okay.
Okay, well, it's 5:30, and I think we should thank Terry. Stick around, come up. Please do.
Thank you. Well, it's good I forgot to push the button. I was thinking that I needed to, if I wanted to mute it. Yeah. I got it.
Sorry.